Broadcasting.
Thank you. Welcome everyone to our evening meeting of the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures. We will start out by taking the roll, so please indicate how you are attending.
Senator Finley. Senator Finley. Oh, excuse me. Senator Riley.
Thanks.
Somebody's not muted. Senator Riley's excused.
Senator Wagner.
Wagner's present by video.
Co-Vice Chair Boquist.
Senator Boquist is here. Sometimes he's been having trouble with his audio. Senator Boquist, can you hear me?
He said he's on the phone and he can't, it won't let him in.
Okay.
I just went across my phone and said that.
Did he say he could hear us?
It looks like he's as a guest.
Okay.
Okay. Co-Chair Burdick.
Present by video.
Representative Levy.
Present by video.
Representative Marsh.
Present by video.
Representative Smith.
Representative Smith is present by video.
Representative Valderrama.
Valderrama present by video.
Co-Vice Chair Pham.
Pham is present by video.
Co-Vice Chair Reschke.
Excused, and we expect him later.
Co-Chair Nathanson.
Present by video.
Okay, we've got a number of bills on for public hearing. Representative Nathanson may have to leave a little early, so we will start out with the Senate bills on our agenda, which is on page 2 of your agenda. And so we will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 102.
Excuse me, Madam Chair, this is Senator Finley. I just want to let you know I'm here.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you.
Okay, we're opening the public hearing on Senate Bill 102.
Yes, co-chairs and members of the committee, Senate Bill 102 has to deal with transient lodging tax issue, and this issue primarily includes a new exemption from the primarily the base of what is the tax. Is subject, or what kind of facilities the tax is subject to, and this takes out the barracks and military quarters that are controlled by the Oregon Military Department, that they are exempt from having to comply for the tax transient lodging tax. So that is both, as you would see in the bill, it is repeated in two places, one for the state transient lodging tax and one for the local taxes. This, I don't think we've had in the past issues with this, but it seems like it have came up in the last couple of years. So this is an addition to what the tax is not applied to. So that's what you have in the bill in front of you.
Okay, we have signed up Dave Stucker. Mr. Stucker, are you with us?
Co-Chair Burdick and Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. I'm Dave Stuckey. I'm the Deputy Director of the Oregon Military Department. And Co-Chair Burdick, thank you for jumping me up to the top of the list. I appreciate it this evening. The military department, this is our agency bill, Senate Bill 102, which looks to exempt Oregon National Guard facilities that provide lodging amenities from having to collect and remit transient lodging taxes. By way of background, our training sites, such as Camp Rylea in Warrington or Camp Umatilla near Hermiston, serve the direct purpose of preparing the Oregon National Guard for all missions, state and federal. Having spent a career dating back to 83 going to Camp Rylea, the post serves the purpose of training for numerous state missions. In fact, later this month, we will have the remainder of the National Guard service members out there training to prepare for wildland fire season, getting certified with their FF2 certification. So our training posts provide support for both serving in the state mission, as well as federal requirements of weapons qualification, driver training, and dismounted movement. There's a second component to this bill, or to our training post, that we'd like to address, and that secondary benefit of our two camps, specifically Umatilla and Rylea, is they serve the military members that have faithfully and honorably served and retired from the armed forces, and those that are applicable to the Purple Heart and Disabled Veterans Equal Access Act of 2018. And that act expanded the ability of certain service members to get benefits at certain military posts. And those types of individuals are former prisoners of war, that all veterans that have a service-connected disability, and then, of course, those veterans that are also honorably discharged from our military armed forces. So OMD has never collected or remitted transient lodging taxes. And the reason why is that, aside from the training use, the population that rents these rooms at our training sites is very, very, very small. And the amount they pay for the stay is just enough to cover the cost of that stay from an operating perspective. And there's no profit gained. All revenue is used as a match to augment federal funds to continue the camp operations. Our rates for our lodging range from no cost to $10 a night for an RV space with no amenities, to $30 a night for a twin bed, a sink, a small desk, and a shared bathroom. These are not the Four Seasons motels, and I guarantee you they're not even Motel 6. What they are is they serve the purpose of our individual, our workforce, and then it also helps provide some augmentation to those retirees. So in conclusion, what we're asking for from this committee is support of Senate Bill 102 and exempting the Oregon Military Department installations from state and local transient lodging taxes. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions? And I apologize for mispronouncing your name.
That's all right, ma'am.
Thank you very much. And you're the only person signed up. So we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 102 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 157 and House Bill 2445, which have the same content. Mazin, yes. This is yours.
That's correct. Madam Chair, the two bills that you've opened, 157 and the Senate bill and House Bill 2445, are identical. And that's part of the process of the tax expenditure process that we've done here. And what both the bills do is make the exemption on the tax expenditure for the medical marijuana users or the medical marijuana program to be listed on an explicit sunset schedule, which of 6 years that every other tax expenditure goes through, instead of what is assumed today, that it is an implicit 6 year sunset under the implicit sunset process. So this one allows it to be sunsetted in January 1st, 2028, where it would be brought back again for the extension at that time.
Okay, and Mazin, please remind us of the bill that required the implicit sunsets. That required sunsets if they weren't specified on a tax expenditure to be included in the schedule.
I have that bill. I'm trying to pull that. I will get that momentarily, Madam Chair.
Okay. We'll hear from our one witness that signed up, Anthony Taylor. Anthony, are you here?
I am, Madam Chair. Thank you very much. So, Madam Chair, Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, thank you for the time this evening to offer some brief comments. I'm hoping that the staff...
Anthony, please identify yourself for the record.
Yes, ma'am. Anthony Taylor, Legislative Director of Compassionate Oregon. And I'm wondering if staff can show my slides. I have two slides that I'd like to present to this to the committee.
Do we have those slides?
It may not be possible to show them if this wasn't arranged in advance.
Okay. Thank you.
Sorry for interrupting, Senator Burdick, but this is sometimes...
No,
that's quite all right, Madam Chair. As long as they're part of the record, that'll be fine. I can just describe them briefly. Since the tax exemption began in October of 2016 and until the pandemic hit, according to OLCC recreational market data shows OMMP patients and caregivers purchases held steady around 5.8 million in monthly sales or approximately 70 million annually. When the pandemic hit in 2020, monthly sales began to climb and by April jumped from the average monthly of 5.8 to 8.7 million. By May, monthly sales were 11.5 and peaked in July at 12.3 million per month. The monthly average for 2020 was 9 million per month or $108 million annually. And current sales continue to show some small growth of approximately 9.1 million per month, January through May. With state and local taxes, of course, combined adding another 20% to the cost of retail cannabis flower and products, were this exemption not in place, patients and caregivers would have paid nearly $22 million more in 2020 for their cannabis purchases. 60% of our OMMP patients qualify for state and federal assistance program, meaning they qualify for a reduced fee card, and there's little left in the budget for a 20% increase in the cost of their medicines. We know the committee supports safe and affordable access to cannabis for those using cannabis medicinally, and look forward to the committee support in continuing this important exemption for patients and their caregivers moving forward. And I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. And I think it's important to emphasize here that putting things on the sunset it's not a statement that they are not worthwhile. You'll see many of these tax credits that are renewed year after year. It simply gives the legislature an opportunity to look at how it's performing. And your testimony was very interesting. To what did you attribute the great increase during the pandemic?
Well, Madam Chair, I would just attribute it as everything else. Everybody was inside, right? They weren't going outside, they weren't doing much. So consumption increase, we saw the same sort of increase in the adult use side of the market as well. And I thank you. Actually, this bill was a bit of a learning experience for me. I did not understand this process. So I'm happy that it's going to be put into the lineup, so to speak, so that it does get reviewed regularly and continue to help these patients.
Okay, thank you. Mathen, did you find that information?
Yes, Madam Chair, I think the Oregon Revised Statute that applies to the sunset, the implicit sunset, is ORS 315-037, and it was it came through the House Bill 3367 of the 2013 session.
Yes. Okay. All right. Thank you. Are there questions of Mathen or Mr. Johnson? Okay. I see no hands up. So thank you, Anthony.
You're welcome. Thank you.
We will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 102, excuse me, Senate Bill 157 and House Bill 2445, and open a public hearing on House Bill 2433.
Good evening, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Kyle Easton, Legislative Revenue Office. Yeah, House Bill 2433 is a measure requiring the Legislative Revenue Office to do a study. More importantly, is the bill has a relating to clause of relating to taxation. So this is expected to be the vehicle for the committee for the omnibus tax measure.
Correct. And that's why it is our very favorite bill. And we have, as I look, we have nobody signed up on that. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, next we will shuffle through my papers. What did I do with that? And we will open a public hearing on 2551.
All right, Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2551. This is a bill that is making some changes to an existing tax credit. It's one of the 11 tax credits that is up for the sunset review this legislative session. And this is the one related to the individual development account. And it's a tax credit for contributions made to support the individual development account or the IDA program. So the credit amount is 90% of the contributions made. The change in the bill here in 2551A is first is extending the sunset for the underlying credit from January 1st, 2022 to January 1st, 2028. So that's the standard 6-year sunset extension. There is a modification on the timing of the credit and when contributions could be made. So it's moving that to allow a taxpayer to make a contribution at a date closer to when they file their tax return. So up until April 15th. And the idea there is just to shrink the time between when a contribution is made and when the benefit is received by the taxpayer through the tax credit. And there's also some programmatic changes made to the individual development account as well in this bill.
Okay, thank you. We have signed up Karen Sachs, followed by Carlos David Garcia. So Karen.
Great. Thank you so much, Co-Chair Burdick, Co-Chair Nathanson, and members of the committee. My name is Karen Sachs, and I work at DEV Northwest. DEV Northwest is an affordable housing and counseling agency serving Lane, Lynn, Benton, Lincoln, Marion, and Clackamas counties. For over a decade, we've been members of a network of agencies that provide individual development accounts, education, and counseling. IDAs are one of the greatest financial resources we see in helping families obtain and maintain financial stability. They are a key piece of the puzzle in providing services as they create opportunities for clients to take control of their financial future. IDAs have the distinct benefit of intersecting many of our lines of business and are a tool that build assets at all different stages in the life of low-income Oregonians. The pandemic and economic crisis has made this even more clear. As we connect with our savers, we hear an overwhelming commitment to their financial goals. Our clients and those served by the broader IDA network have been the hardest hit by the financial impacts of COVID-19. They represent Oregonians living on very low incomes in urban, rural, and suburban areas, and from communities of color. We have found that our clients are better prepared to weather the current financial road ahead because of their participation in the IDA program and know that IDAs are a powerful tool for an equitable recovery throughout Oregon. As the IDA program's funding source is up for review this year, I would note that demand for IDAs generally outpaces available resources. And at DEV Northwest, clients face up to a 2-year waitlist to enroll. A disruption in funding for the IDA program would severely impact current and future savers, throwing them off their path of building assets. We believe that HB 2551A, a renewal of the IDA initiative tax credit, is a critical step in supporting this program. The savings habits and knowledge gained through the IDA program are unlike any other one we have to offer our communities. For the folks who want to start a small business to increase their income, to the high school kids start saving for college, and to the families that get the keys to their very first home, IDAs change lives. Your support to continue to make these opportunities a reality for our neighbors will create more resilient families and communities. We thank you for all of your work to support low-income Oregonians and urge your support of HB 2551A. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions from the committee? I see no questions. So we'll call on Carlos David Garcia.
Co-Chair Burdick, Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity. opportunity to speak in support of House Bill 2551A. My name is Carlos David Garcia, and I'm the Executive Director of Neighborhood Partnerships. I want to provide an overview of the efficiency of the IDA tax credit as a funding mechanism. To respect your time, we've limited the amount of people that we signed up to testify tonight. But if you'd like to hear more about IDAs, I'd invite you to review the 45 plus individuals who have submitted written testimony in support of House Bill 2551 and the oral testimony given by IDA savers and providers in Senate House when taxpayers donate $1 to the IDA initiative. They receive 90 cent state tax credit that can be used to offset their income tax liability. The tax credit mechanism has allowed us to leverage state resources effectively. When we successfully sell 7.5 million in tax credits, that translates into 8.3 million available for the IDA initiative. Neighborhood Partnership serves as the contract administrator for the IDA program and has been has the responsibility of raising funds and marketing the tax credit to donors. Between 2012 and 2018, we had no issue selling out of the tax credit because donating to the initiative translated into a net financial benefit for donors who were able to claim both a state tax credit and a federal charitable deduction. Federal tax law changes in 2017 limited the incentives previously available to donors and impacted the IDA initiative. In response to these federal law changes, we made changes in our marketing strategy and sought out donations of appreciated stock, which still has a meaningful benefit to donors. The legislature also acted in 2019 by adjusting the tax credit rate for IDAs to 90 cents on the dollar. In 2020, MP was able to sell nearly all of our 7.5 million available for tax credits, and our changes in marketing strategy and successful so far in 2020.
Mr. Garcia, you're having
like a coin. Tax credit sales for 2021 are ahead of for 2021 are ahead of schedule, and to date we've raised close to $2 million, meaning that we're on track with earlier tax credit sales when we had no issue selling the tax credit. Once again, I appreciate the work that has gone into helping the initiative be successful, and I ask for your support in renewing the IDA tax credit. I'm happy to answer any questions now.
Thank you, Mr. Garcia. We had a little trouble with your audio, and I was just looking online to see if your testimony was in the record, but if it's not in the record, if you would just make sure that your written testimony is submitted to the record, because we did miss a little of what you said.
Thank you. I've submitted that earlier today.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. Okay, that concludes our witness registration. And so
Co-chair Burdick.
Yes.
We do have Representative Meek that is signed up for House Bill 2551 as well.
Oh, my apologies. I do not have you on my list. So thank you for bringing that to my attention. Representative Meek.
Thank you, Co-Chair Burdick and Co-Chair Nathanson, and Co-Vice-Chairs Boquist and Pham, members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to speak in favor of House Bill 2551A today. For the record, my name is Mark Meek, and I'm the State Representative for House District 40, Oregon City, Gladstone, Jennings Lodge, and Johnson City. And very proud to speak in support of House Bill 2551A. House Bill 2551A extends the sunset of the Oregon Individual Development Account Initiative and makes technical changes to improve the availability of the tax credit and help families save around their schedules. Most importantly, House Bill 2551A makes sure that this program stays around for another 6 years by extending the sunset on the IDA initiative's tax credit funding source. It also authorizes the tax credit to be sold for an additional 3.5 months through tax day of April 15th or 16th every year. The IDA initiative was created by the state legislature in 1999 to help low-income Oregonians to save for home ownership, a college education, business ownership, and other goals to invest in their futures and build financial stability. The IDA initiative is a crucial tool to help low-income Oregonians build financial stability. as somebody personally who survived poverty growing up, I know how hard it is to save money when you are mainly trying to survive. The opportunity to build reserves through a matched savings account while also participating in financial training will allow participants to develop financial skills and wealth they may not otherwise have access to. It is also well documented that the COVID-19 pandemic has gravely affected Oregon's low-income communities. IDAs are an invaluable resource to support our most vulnerable Oregonians, allowing them to build savings and create financial stability that would otherwise be impossible. I might also add that this program can be very impactful to our struggling BIPOC communities. House Bill 2551 has broad bipartisan support. It passed unanimously out of the House Human Services and House Revenue Committees, and over a quarter of the chamber is signed on as a sponsor. I ask for your support in House Bill 2551A, and once again, Co-Chair Burdick, I appreciate the opportunity to speak in favor of this. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Meek, and again, my apologies for not recognizing you first. Are there questions for Representative Meek? Okay, I see no questions, so we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2551 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2721.
Yes, Madam Chair. House Bill 2721 is a bill that's relating to one of the tax credits that you do have up for your standard review this legislative session, the Working Family Household Dependent Care Credit. The difference with House Bill 2721, and the committee heard the standard six-year extension of this bill just the other day, but House Bill 2721, again, is relating to the Working Family Household Independent Care Credit. But the change here in House Bill 2721 is proposing a change with the policy here is to predominantly to expand the availability or the qualification of this credit or the qualification amount of this underlying credit, predominantly for, these are gonna be students, and more likely the way that this is designed is tailored for students at the lower end of the income spectrum. So there's a few changes made to the credit, again, tailored towards increasing the amount of the credit or the ability of individuals to qualify who are students. The credit itself, again, this is a credit that is based upon the expenses of, predominantly it's gonna be childcare. So childcare expenses, and this credit helps to offset some of those costs. I would note there is some information in OLIS uploaded in the meeting materials under this bill that does have the existing credit, and then in another column tries to display where the changes are being made in this credit if people are interested in the details of how this credit is being adjusted again towards those predominantly low-income students.
Okay, we have signed up. Let's see, we have Representative Pham signed up on this one. Representative.
Madam Co-Chair, I believe that I'm signed up for House Bill 2819.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I've my apologies here.
Madam Chair, we didn't have anyone signed up at the start. I don't know if Haley, if anyone has signed up since then.
Nope, that is correct. We have no signups for this bill.
Okay. So we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2721 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2819.
Okay, Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2819, this is a bill relating to Oregon's Earned Income Tax Credit. The change here in regards to the Earned Income Tax Credit has to do with taxpayers that are filing their taxes using an individual taxpayer ID number. So Oregon's Earned Income Tax Credit is a percentage of the federal credit amount, and because of that, Oregon's credit more or less just piggybacks off of that federal credit. So the way that the structure of the credit at the federal level and the laws supporting that flow through into Oregon's credit, as Oregon's Earned Income Tax Credit is just a percentage of those federal credit. And one of the limitations at the federal level is related to taxpayers that are filing a tax return using an individual tax ID number or an ITIN. So in certain cases, if a taxpayer is filing their taxes using an ITIN, their ability to qualify for the Earned Income Tax Credit is limited. So the change in House Bill 2819 would be for Oregon's earned income tax purposes. Oregon would allow taxpayers who are filing using an ITIN to qualify for the Oregon portion of the Earned Income Tax Credit. And they would do that by the taxpayer more or less computing what their federal credit would have been if they had been allowed to claim the credit at the federal level, and then you apply the Oregon percentage, the 9 or 12%, to compute the Oregon amount.
Okay, now we'll call on Representative Pham. Welcome.
Thank you, Co-Chair Nathan. Okay, thank you, Co-Chair Burdick and Co-Chair Nathanson and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Con Pham, and I'm the state rep for House District 46, and I am honored to testify in support of House Bill 2819 to extend the earned income tax credit for Oregon workers to file their taxes with an I-10. At its core, House Bill 2819 is about making sure that everyone who works and files taxes in Oregon is treated the same. Right now, we know we have families that are working and aren't able to make ends meet, and these are the families that the EITC is intended to support. The EITC is one of the largest anti-poverty tools available in the U.S. According to national studies, the EITC has helped to reduce poverty by 10% and childhood poverty by 16%. As a parent, I'm thinking particularly about families with children. We know about the impacts of living in chronic poverty, that living in chronic poverty can have on children. And we have seen the research that shows that children whose families have access to the EITC have better health outcomes and have better education outcomes. It's really important that we expand access to this earned income tax credit so that families can start to gain economic stability for themselves and for their children. Previous EITC reforms have passed in Oregon with strong bipartisan support. By addressing this barrier to accessing the EITC, we can create a healthier state where families and children will be able to gain economic stability and access opportunities to thrive. I urge members of the committee to support House Bill 2819. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions for Representative Pham? Okay, I see no questions. We also have signed up Representative Campos. I'm not seeing you on the participant list, but I'm not. There you are. Welcome, Representative Campos.
Hello, good evening. Good evening, Co-Chairs Burdick and Nathanson and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Winsvay Campos. My pronouns are she, her, and I am the state representative for House District 28, which covers Beaverton and Alloa and sits on the traditional lands of the Atfalati, Cowlitz, Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde, and Kalapuya peoples. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of HB 2819. This bill is important for Oregon because it will bring equity to a program that benefits everyday Oregonians who are working hard to pursue a happy and thriving life for themselves and their families. HB 2819 serves to expand the earned income tax credit, which helps provide security for working Oregonians. EITC allows recipients to bring take-home to more money per paycheck and serves to give further economic security. Many of the folks currently benefiting from the EITC program many of the folks currently benefiting from the EITC work in the agriculture, food processing, retail, or construction sectors. However, though this program helps many Oregon families, there are many more who are in need of but are ineligible for the EITC. These currently ineligible families contribute into our tax system and are at the center of many of our critical industries. Yet, for decades, despite their contributions, they continue to be ignored and are practically invisible when it comes to retribution of tax credits. Economic retribution for some and the invalidation of others is a social injustice. The current language of the EITC excludes mixed status households and dreamers as well. If we as a legislature choose to expand the EITC to families who file their taxes with an individual taxpayer identification number, many of them being Latino or Asian American, we could bring this program to over 30,000 more Oregon families. Their success is Oregon's success, and we cannot pass up this opportunity to invest in their futures. Another population that will benefit from the expansion of the EIT are some of our domestic violence survivors and their families. Abusers leverage finances, support systems, shelter, and more when keeping survivors from leaving them. And when survivors who are able to leave would be eligible for the EITC, be it not for their filing status, they are omitted from receiving critical resources that can help them secure shelter, build stability in the home, connect with community, invest in their children, and set their family up for future successes free of restriction or abuse. These folks are a part of our communities. They are contributing to our communities. They work hard, and they are Oregonians. We should treat them as such. I know what a bill like this could have meant for my family. I know the barriers and the lack of access to this kind of financial resource creates. Co-chairs Burdick and Nathanson, members of the committee, I hope you'll hold the earned income tax credit true to its intended purpose and expand access to the Oregonians who would already qualify if they weren't using an ITIN to file their taxes. We must create and support equity where we can. Thank you.
Thank you. Discussion, Senator Riley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to thank these two representatives for presenting these this important discussion for us. This is a very important tax credit, and it deserves to be expanded in this way. I really appreciate their testimonies.
Thank you. Other questions or comments? Okay, thank you. Next, Chris Coughlin.
Good evening. Thank you very much. Co-Chair Burdick, Co-Chair Nathanson, and members of the committee, for the record, my name's Chris Coughlin. I'm the Policy and Advocacy Director at Our Children Oregon. Our Children Oregon's mission is to be a voice and force for the common good for all of Oregon's children, ensuring all children have the resources and opportunities they need to thrive. We convene the Children's Agenda, a legislative agenda championing equitable state legislative policies and shared investments to improve the lives of Oregon's children and their families. We are also part of the Leave No Worker Behind campaign, a coalition of over 50 organizations supporting House Bill 2819. We've submitted a fact sheet that lists our coalition partners, and it's posted on OLIS. I hope you take a look. As you've heard, this bill would end the ITIN exclusion for Oregon's earned income tax credit, and it is a priority issue on the 2021 Children's Agenda. It's an opportunity to address an important issue of racial equity within our revenue system. And as you've heard, Oregon's EITC is based on eligibility for the federal EITC, which discriminates against families who would otherwise qualify for the EITC based on their earned income. This includes 34,000 Oregon families, predominantly Latino and Asian Americans, who file their taxes using an ITIN number, as you've heard. And as you've also heard, the EITC is currently denied to everyone in a household, even if just one member files their taxes with an ITIN. Passing this bill would mean that nearly 85,000 U.S. citizens living in mixed status households in Oregon would be able to benefit from the EITC, and most of these people are children. This means that one in every 10 of Oregon's children are currently excluded from benefiting from the EITC, and that could be changed with this bill. The EITC has been shown to lead to improved health outcomes, better school performance, higher rates of graduation and college attendance, and higher earnings as adults for those children in households who access the EITC. Some of that is linked to what Representative Pham said about the poverty-reducing aspects of this piece of policy. So House Bill 2819 has the potential to invest in all workers, no matter their place of origin, so that they can adequately take care of their families. I thank you for your consideration, and we urge your support of House Bill 2819.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? All right, thank you. Our last witness is Martha Sonato.
Hi, good evening, Co-Chair Burdick and Co-Chair Nathanson and members of the committee. My name is Marta Sonato, and I'm the political director at Bikun, Oregon's Farm Worker Union. Thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony in support of House Bill 2819, the Leave No Worker Behind campaign. At Bikun, we work to empower farm workers and working Latinx families and to improve the working and living conditions of Oregon's agricultural workers. House Bill 2819 would positively impact the lives of Oregonians with ITIN numbers by ensuring that they are able to access the state's EITC, regardless of how they file their taxes. We're also pleased that the EITC for ITIN filers was also included in the governor's recommended budget. As my colleague Chris was saying, many of our 34,000 ITIN filers work in essential industries in Oregon, such as agriculture, accommodation and food services, manufacturing, retail, and others, where they typically are paid low wages. ITIN filers also include many immigrant small business owners who provide needed goods and services to rural communities and have been hit hard by the pandemic and economic crisis. In this COVID-19 pandemic, frontline workers who are disproportionately women, immigrant, and BIPOC individuals have shouldered the greatest losses. House Bill 2819 is an economic justice and equity priority for our communities. The EITC has been proven to make a profound and meaningful impact in the lives of Oregonians and being able to afford basic needs. The EITC rewards families for work and is one of the most cost-effective means for helping working families reduce the adverse effects of poverty. For many of these families, the EITC is a game changer. It means that it can help them fix a car or buy a used car to ensure that they have transportation for work, catching up on bills, and investing in their children. Rural legislative districts disproportionately benefit from the EITC. As an organization based in rural Oregon, we know the positive impact being able to access the EITC would mean for rural families. We respectfully request the committee to support House Bill 2819 to ensure that ITIN filers are able to access the EITC program. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there questions from the committee? Okay, I see no questions. And does that complete our sign up? Have we had any last minute signups on this?
That completes our sign up, Co-Chair Burdick.
Okay, thank you. So I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2819 and open a public hearing on House Bill 3302.
Hi, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3302 is a bill that would create a new income tax credit that would be available to individuals and corporations that make contributions to a tax-exempt workforce training organization. The credit in this case would be limited to the amount of the contribution, but also would max at $250 for an individual or $2,500 for a corporation or the taxpayer's tax liability. So the credit wouldn't be refundable. However, the credit can, if there are unused amounts of the credit, they can be carried forward up to 3 years. This would be applicable to tax years beginning on or after January 1st, 2021 and before January 1st, 2031. And then we do have two amendments, the dash A3 and the dash A4. The amendments themselves do the same thing, and it so I'll describe the dash A3, and it's removing the requirement that a taxpayer would receive certification of eligibility for the credit from Department of Justice. So it's removing Department of Justice from being a certifying agency, and rather is just requiring the taxpayer to retain receipts and other means to substantiate that they've made a contribution to one of the workforce training organizations. The dash A4 is the same content. It's just written as a gut and stuff amendment. So they're both make the same change related to that Department of Justice certification and removing them.
Okay. And then the revenue impact on this would be what?
Yeah, Madam Chair, we put this at about $400,000 per biennium is what we're expecting. And we didn't have the full revenue impact statement at the time that the bill came through, so that's not up there in OLIS. But that $400,000 amount was contained in the most recent table that was provided to the committee of all the bills that were in the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures. But yes, we are expecting to be about $400,000 per biennium.
Okay, thank you. Representative Reschke, is he here yet?
I am, Madam Co-Chair.
Okay.
Thank you. And thank you, Mr. Easton, for your description. I'll just be real quick and say that this tax credit in my area in Klamath Falls has one of the most, has one of the poorest neighborhoods in all of Oregon. And one of the things that we're trying to do is not only educate people, but also give them the skills so they can be employable in the community. Because we know that work not only produces wealth, but it also produces worth. And so what we're trying to do here is to not only just for Klamath Falls, but any job training center that's a nonprofit, it's a little sweetener. Instead of a tax deduction, you can get a tax credit of up to $250 for donating to one of these organizations. So we can help, folks that are kind of in a cycle of poverty become self-sufficient.
Okay, questions from the committee? Okay, I see no questions, so we will close the public hearing on House Bill 3302 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2737.
Yeah, Madam Chair, House Bill 2737 is a proposal to create a new personal income tax subtraction from federal taxable income for amounts received as AmeriCorps National Service Education Awards. So this would be for those taxpayers that receive these awards, they would be able to subtract them on their Oregon income tax return. And it would apply to tax years beginning on or after January 1st, 2021. I would note, following up on the conversation earlier with Mazin, was because there's not a specified sunset contained in the measure, the implicit sunset statute would apply. So there would be an implicit sunset of this subtraction applicable 1/1/2027. So you get that standard 6-year sunset.
Okay. We have Representative Leaf. I have Representative Leaf signed up. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
Okay.
It did seem earlier, Madam Chair.
All right.
Madam Co-Chair, I could go walk down the hall real quick and knock on his door. I do see him in the room here, but I...
Oh, I see him now. See his picture. Right here. Okay, go ahead. You get to start.
I'm rocking two committee meetings at the same time, so this has been an interesting day.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, thank you, Co-Chairs Burdick and Nathanson, Vice Chairs and committee members. I want to talk to you about House Bill 2737.
Would you give your name?
I'm going to introduce myself. For the record, my name's Gary Leaf, and I am the representative for House District 2.
Okay.
So I have a bill introduced to remove an unfair tax burden for the AmeriCorps members when they go to use the education award that they earn after their year of service. First of all, I want to thank all you members of the House Revenue Committee who've already voted to support this bill and who referred it to this committee. Your support is appreciated. And I want to thank my co-chair, Nathanson, for signing on as a chief co-sponsor on the bill. Your support is immense. Thank you. You know, for several years, my staffer, Mike Fieldman, who I worked with on the local community action network, was on the AmeriCorps board of directors, which is a Roseburg nonprofit that administers the local AmeriCorps program. And he's shown me some great community projects that have happened, you know, around not just in Roseburg, but in our communities. I don't know if you understand, but to be an AmeriCorps member, you have to commit to an entire year of service at a particular site doing a particular job. While performing this work as a member, you receive a stipend that's below minimum wage. Along with this is a living allowance. Members also receive a valuable education award of about $6,400 to offset higher education costs. You know, this award is earned after successfully completing their entire year of service. So they don't work a month and then get this award. This award can be used to pay for school costs like tuition or to pay off loans, tuition loans. In Oregon, when this award is used, unfortunately, it becomes taxable, which means that that member who's worked for below minimum wage for an entire year and has not had anything withheld from his living allowance to cover this cost. This can be a significant barrier for many of the members in using this award. So many members will just simply shy away. No, I don't want to do that because I can see the end of the tunnel. The other reality is this is a tax disproportionately harms members from low-income, disadvantaged, and BIPOC families, as they are the most challenged in finding additional money needed to use their award. The award does bring value to Oregon's higher education when it's used. However, many of them go unused because of this tax creates a barrier to use it. Removing this barrier will ultimately bring more revenue into the state system than it will lose in tax revenue. You know, I think this bill overall is a win-win for our state, that it brings in more money to the state and it removes a barrier for low-income, historically disadvantaged people who are trying to improve themselves and enhance their education. You know, because of this, I ask you to support House Bill 2737 and understand the barriers that this creates right now. Thank you very much, Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you. Senator Wagner.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to be able to testify in support of the concept that's before us today. I had the amazing opportunity to sit down with Representative Leaf's Chief of Staff to talk about our shared interest and passion for the AmeriCorps program. I had the opportunity, I was appointed by Governor Ted Kulongoski at the time, to serve on what was then called the OCFAS Board, the Oregon Commission for Voluntary Action and Service. And actually, under my tenure, we called it Oregon Volunteers with an exclamation point. It's a phenomenal group that oversees the state portion of the state AmeriCorps funding, as well as works with community-based organizations on volunteerism across Oregon. I also have a deep passion for AmeriCorps. I have two siblings. Both of my younger siblings participated in AmeriCorps across Oregon. My passion notwithstanding for the AmeriCorps program, I do have a couple questions, and I raised them at the time. I would probably rather be supportive of this initiative if it were something that was a grant program in Ways and Means that we could actually put a means test on and challenge some of the assertions underlying who served and who benefits from the program. I love my siblings dearly, but they did just fine in terms of their actual award. And so if there was a way to potentially have this conversation down in Ways and Means and look at this as a grant-based program with a similar amount of resources and then means test it for communities that are really needing it, that would earn my strong support. But I do want to thank Representative Leaf and his chief of staff for their passion for a program that I support as well.
Thank you very much. Other questions from the committee? Okay. Michael Fieldman.
Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you.
Okay. Thank you, Co-Chair Burdick and Nathanson and members of the committee. I want to thank you for the opportunity to talk to you about House Bill 2737. For the record, my name is Michael Fieldman. I live in Roseburg, and I'm currently the legislative assistant for Representative Leaf. First of all, I also want to thank the members of the House Revenue Committee for your support you've already given for this bill and for your help in moving it to the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures. Your support is much appreciated. Prior to my position with Rep. Leaf, I helped administer AmeriCorps programs for 25 years. Additionally, I was a member of the Oregon Volunteer Commission for over 8 years and served as its past chair. This commission oversees the AmeriCorps funding in the state. Because of this, I have seen the positive impact AmeriCorps members provide to our state. This bill allows AmeriCorps members to use their education award without having to come up with the money to pay the state taxes that are assessed at its use. AmeriCorps members earn this award of about $6,400 after their year of service. They earn this in addition to their below minimum wage living allowance. The payment for this tax has been a barrier to many members in utilizing the award. Removing this barrier is a good idea for a couple of reasons. First, it makes good financial sense to the state. If a member cannot use their education award, then the state does not get any tax revenue, but it loses the $6,400 that would have been spent on school costs, including tuition. There's an old saying about being a penny wise, but a pound foolish. I think this saying applies to this tax. The state would be better getting the $6,400 in tuition. Secondly, it addresses an equity problem this tax creates, in that the people who struggle most to find the additional money for the taxes come from lower income and disadvantaged families due to the financial limitations they experience. We need to be looking for ways to remove barriers to education for this population and not imposing them. Removing this minimal tax revenue to the state, but significant tax burden to the members, would be the right way to accomplish this. Because of this, I ask for your support in the passage of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Thank you. Next is Daniel Altamirano.
Buen dia, co-chairs Burdick and Nathanson, vice chairs and members of the committee. My name is Daniel Altamirano Hernandez, and I am an AmeriCorps alumni from Oregon, and now I'm serving on the Oregon Volunteers Commission. I want to thank you for your hard work and attention thus far to House Bill 2737 this session, which aims to reduce barriers to service members accessing their benefits. As a BIPOC Latinx AmeriCorps alumni who shares a low socioeconomic background, serving my state was a fulfilling task that helped advance equity and helped eliminate poverty in my community. It felt good to serve my own state as an Oregonian from a small town. I helped community members with the same challenges that I faced growing up. Unfortunately, using my earned education award grant is coupled with barriers, including taxation on the award. Passing this bill means hundreds of volunteers giving back to their community every year will be relieved of having to pay taxes on the valuable education stipend that they receive in recognition of their service, which happens in other states. I want to thank you for your support and consideration to move this forward for package. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? I see no questions. So Nathan Ricks.
Good evening, Chair Burdick, Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. My name is Nathan Ricks, and I'm appearing for you here today in my capacity as the Chair of Oregon Volunteers Commission. I'll keep my comments very brief. As you all know, we have just about 4,000 AmeriCorps volunteers across the state of Oregon that are strengthening our rural, urban, frontier communities. And I believe in all the arguments that have been said in support today, just want to add onto that there are some AmeriCorps members that, while they may do their service here, might choose to go to another state to use their education award because they're not taxed. And so we're following in the good footsteps of Iowa, Minnesota, and Nebraska that have already made their award tax-free. And we want to appeal to those cost-conscious public servants so they can use their award and keep the money from the AmeriCorps program right here in Oregon. We thank you for considering this and for our champions and for those who have served with AmeriCorps before who are part of this committee. Thank you very much.
And if this would be to you or to Mr. Altamirano or Michael Fieldman, did you consider asking for an appropriation along the lines that Senator Wagner mentioned before?
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, that is something we considered. In consulting with our national partners at the American Service Commission, and in looking what other states did, we thought this was the best practice that we have at hand, but are certainly open to any considerations that you all have if it moves to Ways and Means.
Okay, thank you. Other questions from the committee? Okay, I see no other questions, and that completes our... Yes?
I apologize. I see Rep. Valderrama's hand is up.
Okay, it's not showing on my screen, so thank you. Representative Valderrama.
Yes, thank you, Chair Burdick. I was curious, I'm not sure who specifically this goes to, but if you can share a little bit about how a young Oregonian considering service might learn of this tax break and be able to utilize it.
Who would like to take that? Representative Leaf, you're still here.
Chair Burdick, this is Michael Fieldman. I'll try to answer that. Actually, the tax break would just they would just be allowed to deduct the that from their federal taxes, and so it would just be part of tax information that probably AmeriCorps program could get out to all the members so that they would be aware of it.
And Chair Burdick, members of the commission, Rep. Valderrama, Nathan Ricks, again with Oregon Volunteers. If I could just add on to that, we do have staff that run our AmeriCorps program here in Oregon Volunteers, and they do robust onboarding as well as exit interviews so that they actually educate all of the members on what their benefits are and how they can use them. And Oregon Volunteers in general is situated within HEC, the Higher Educating Coordinating Commission. So we have lots of opportunities to make sure that all Oregonians who've earned it could use it right here in the state tax-free.
Okay. Does that answer your question, Representative Valderrama?
It does, thank you.
Thank you. Other questions from the committee? Okay, I still see no questions, so we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2737, and that completes our agenda. We do have another meeting tomorrow. We'll be having some discussions between now and tomorrow. Our intent at this point is to put the tax credits that we approve into the single omnibus bill, which has been done in the past. So stay tuned for that, and we will meet again tomorrow at, I believe, 3:15. Is that correct, Kyle?
Yes, that's correct, Madam Chair.
And so thank you, committee, and thank you, witnesses, and we are adjourned.